Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Aeolian Impromptu. I'm your host, Maya Barsack. Today my guest is Italian-American composer Luciano Chessa. Good morning, Luciano.
Good morning, Maya.
How are you?
I'm doing really well.
Yeah, fantastic. What have you been up to during this very interesting, special time under this COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, I'm reconnecting with California. That's primarily the main thing I've been doing. After living in New York for a couple of years, I came to California on March 12 because I had a performance schedule at the Center for New Music on March 16, and the performance got basically canceled the day I arrived.
That's dramatic.
Yeah. Then the plan was to return to New York City the end of the spring break, then didn't happen. That's because right after the concert got canceled, within a couple of days, the city of San Francisco determined to begin a lockdown. And then the next thing that happened for me was that both New York University and the new school, two institutions where I have been teaching, decided to move all instruction online. So all in a sudden, I find myself in San Francisco. And, you know, I lived in California and in the Bay Area for about 20 years. So that's basically what has happened in the past couple of months.
Wow, that's intense. And so you're going to Lou Harrison's retreat in Joshua Tree. And are you going to be writing some music, improvising, performing?
Yeah, I will be doing all the above. I think the idea is to create a piece there, which will also be filmed by Eva Soltes, the director of the program. Eva was just telling me that maybe the first work that has been done there during the lockdown.
Fantastic.
So I'm excited about that. It's a part of the world that I adore, and that space particularly is a place where I have written a lot of music in the past. The key scenes from my third opera were written in that very room. Oh gosh, 3 years ago when I was there last time. And so I have a lot of memories.
And so tell us a little bit about your process of composing. Is there a particular way you approach writing music, or it's kind of different every time?
I wouldn't say it is different every time, but there are, of course, new things that I always try to do. But I feel that I find greater interest and excitement in work on something quite specific and then try to do that specific something in a slightly different way. So one of the things that I've been doing, especially working with instrumental music, reasoning around the notion of counterpoint, I just recently discussed this on another interview that I had last week on NPR for a new piece that I have written, a commission from the Library of Congress, a piece for solo viola for Charlton Lee, the viola player for the Del Sol String Quartet. The idea is that I try to think of the counterpoint as a way of creating sound and relationship between sound that wouldn't necessarily be the one that are dictated by the note against note counterpoint that you would find in classic, you know, treatises, you know, counterpoint in a more abstract way. And
so you're creating your own species of counterpoint.
Yeah, exactly. The 11th species of counterpoint was to try to see if we can take the notion of counterpoint being two events happening at the same time in a way that is more related to collage technique. In other words, you can have a line that is accompanied by a counterpoint. It could be a language that will feel like, I don't know, noise music from, you know, the 80s, the 1980s, or something like that. This is a very general way of describing something that I've been trying to do in many different ways. So the idea of accompanying something with something else, but without using the same language and aesthetic. Also have counterpoint working with different styles. So my idea is if I use a line that could be straight out of, I don't know, like Frescobaldi's playbook, but I accompany that line with something that could be probably similar in terms of language to Cage or Scherrino, then what? I mean, can we do that? And so I've been doing that in various ways through the years. Sometimes the layers that are accompanying are very much the background. For example, if you hear my Siciliana, it's a piece that is somewhat rooted traditionally in tonal harmony. It's also a piece that I've written when I was 13 years old. It's a piece for solo violin that is part of a longer composition in the partita for unaccompanied violin. Well, when I reworked the piece, I was fine with just about everything, but I added another layer. Sometimes I play with foreground and background a lot, so amplifying basically the background to bring it forward, and which is what actually happens in the very last piece that I have written, the commission from the Library of Congress, that is entirely about foreground and background and noise and tonality coexisting in counterpoint.
And so how do you set that up? Are you actually producing electronic files, or are you just doing all acoustic instruments to add those effects?
For the most part, I use acoustic instrument, but I have also used some simple noise generator, white noise generator. Sometimes I play the Siciliana for violin on the piano in my concert, and I have a tiny app for the iPhone where I'm projecting white noise and shaping white noise in counterpoint with that piece in order to recreate what is the experience of hearing the piece played by a violinist with the bells. You know, in that case, of course, the bells have a different sound than white noise, but it doesn't really matter in that context because it's not about the quality of sound, but it's about this idea. So for me, doing that, using white noise is the substitute for the sound of the bells. And I, of course, have done pieces where the pianist is wearing jingle bell bracelet as well. I have a long solo piano piece titled Luganis with the video by Terry Berlier, which I performed extensively all over the world. And that piece, titled Luganis, requires the performer to use jingle bell bracelet, a crucial point of the piece. And that piece also is about melody, but it is also this sort of somewhat tonal melody that is accompanied by giant roar coming from the underbelly of the piano, produced by 32 electric toothbrushes rumbling inside. In the newest piece, the idea is to use twine. I'm using this hemp twine that is sort of bowing the two lowest strings of the viola as the other two strings are used and played in a traditional way, shaping a melody.
So are you going for sonorities that basically challenges your listeners' aesthetics and ears?
Yeah, but I try to do it in such a way that is also challenges but don't alienate them entirely. In other words, I have been very fond of composers like Lachenmann and Cherino that uses, or more recently Pierluigi Billone, that uses very aggressive sound with traditional instruments. But I'm an educated listener, meaning that I've been a composer all of my life and I study composition, I practice it, and I do a lot of things around music. If there was a way of creating a piece in which some tunefulness was also present, perhaps the noise could also be absorbed and incorporated without too much of a struggle. You know, this notion of counterpoint, of different sound sensibilities of style, one that is more tonal, the other that more abrasive. Because I'm, as a composer growing up in the 90s, I was fascinated by both languages, or by a variety of languages. And so, you know, I am interested in the way Haydn construct lines in string quartet, but I'm also interested in Lachenmann's way of doing things. And of course, having worked with Russolo's Intorno Rumori for so many years, I've been particularly fond of noise, and I've been thinking of ways of incorporating noise in my music.
So you are the creator of the art of noise.
What do you mean? The art of noise was written by Luigi Russolo.
But it's the Luciano Chessa's art of noise and sound and aesthetic.
Well, yeah, that's mine. There may be others. I don't know if I can say I'm the creator of anything. You know, I like to do these things and see what happens. It's not so much that I'm going to crown myself like Napoleon. A coronation scene.
But we are, I think, when one writes music, you're basically sculpting, you know, some sonorities, some soundscapes. So
it is true. I see that in a very humble way. I mean, though, I don't really think, I mean, this is my own way, a little bit of a craftsman, I suppose, and people do craft. I mean, if I feel this, you know, if I use the metaphor, you know, there are composers that regard themselves as being the Napoleon being crowned, and I think more like I'm making a little tiny piece of pottery or something.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So we get to enjoy what you've, you know, come up with and join you for the ride when we get to see it live. Do you think that seeing your music live has a is more approachable, let's say, for somebody who's never heard your music than, you know, putting on a CD? Or
I think different pieces behave in different ways, but I'm trying to make sure that though the experiences may be different, meaning that like you get the specific experience by seeing the piece live that it is that you do when you just hear the recording, but I try to make sure that there's enough information and enough enjoyment in both. So while it will be possible to stay, or it's just the same if you hear the piece or if you witness the piece, I need to make sure that I put enough in the piece in terms of just the sound, that if there is only a live recording, though you may not get a totality of the experience, you still get something that it is there that will keep you listening in a way.
Well, so, I'm thinking mostly because a lot of your pieces are very performance oriented. I would even add multidisciplinary. There's a theatricality to them.
Yeah, no, of course. And because the pieces oftentimes are conceived to be performed live, I feel like I should take advantage of the fact that we also have eyes as listener, right? Because so much of the listening experience is not what I put in it, but is also what the viewer takes from it. Yeah, I think it's a challenge that many composers have been having, because obviously there are many composers that are considering things from the same perspective that I have, meaning trying to bring in performance actions in the piece or adding theatrical elements. I'm big about acceptance, meaning that if this is what they get, they'll try to make the most out of that experience. So that requires, I suppose, from a viewer or listener, a little bit of goodwill. not focus on what you are not getting, but focus on what it is that in front of your ears.
Totally makes sense. Well, thank you, Luciano. And do you have any closing thoughts?
Well, yeah, I would like to say maybe one of the other pieces that we could include in the podcast is a collaboration with a viola player from Syria who is currently living in Strasbourg, my friend Karam. I met him in Turkey in a festival and a series of workshops for children of Syrian refugees in the area of Turkey on the border with Syria. The title that I had given to the piece was Souvenir Evan Song. It's actually a line from a French song that I very much love by Philippe Catherine. So you will understand maybe better this concept of evanescence.
Fabulous.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much. And be well, take good care. And say hello to the Joshua Tree cacti.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you very much for inviting me.
My pleasure, Luciano. Without further ado, let's listen to a couple works by Luciano Chessa. We're going to start off with the Ciciliana, performed by violinist Benjamin Creef, followed by Souvenir Evanescent, featuring Luciano Chessa on keyboard and Karam Al-Zuhir on viola. Thank you. just heard a couple pieces featuring composer Luciano Chessa. Piece entitled Souvenir Evanescent, which is actually an improvisation between Luciano Chessa on keyboard and Karam Al-Zouir on viola. And that was preceded by the Siciliana, which features violinist Benjamin Kreith. Thanks again for tuning in. I'll be back with another interview soon. Till then, be well.